Yeah, you don't want to find out how mentally tough you are on race day. Hopefully you've trained and you've experienced some things. I do agree with you too that I think for some people it is a bit innate. I think of Courtney Dewalter, who loves the pain cave, like loves it. Like she's said how much she loves the pain cave. Most of us aren't built like that, but I think a lot of us can develop it over time.
Hi, this is James, and I'm a big-ass runner from Ohio, where I like to jump over roots and run from danger noodles in the beautiful Cuyahoga Valley National Park. Welcome to the Big-Ass Runner Podcast, where we entertain and encourage trail runners from all over the world. Now here's your host, the fantastic Clydesdale, Jeff Harrell.
Well, thank you, James, for that fantastic introduction. As James said, my name is Jeff Harrell. This is the Big Ass Runner Trail Running Podcast, episode number 158. We have a great show for you today. And in fact, over the next several weeks, we are going to hear from some powerful women. You're going to love this. In segment number one, we're talking trail safety. And we're going to talk with someone who has created a product several of you are familiar with. In fact, I heard about this product from some Big Ass Runner herd members. You're really going to enjoy this conversation. We don't talk enough about trail safety, so we're going to hit that pretty hard in segment number one. You're going to enjoy that. And in segment number two, Coaching Corral is back. We're going to talk with Coach Melody and Coach Greg about mental toughness. You're really going to enjoy that conversation. But first, two quick things. One is, you guys know Path Projects is a great partner of ours. It's getting hot. You need to get some new Path gear. Pathprojects.com. It's funny, when I run, I'm pretty much head to toe, other than my exoskin socks, with Path gear. Path hat on backwards, Path shirt, Path shorts. It's amazing. It's amazing. Pathprojects.com. It's getting hot. Go out there and restock on your Path Projects gear. And the second thing I have for you is, I was out on a run the other day, and that's some of the best thinking time for me. I don't know if it's for you as well. I like to think while I'm running out there. Just ideas pop into my head, different things. It's just a great time to clear your head. And I had this idea of a mini segment we're going to call Tip of the Week. So the trail running tip of the week is going to happen from now on. We're going to do it every episode. I just love the idea so much. You guys can tell me if it's valuable or not, but we want to add value in every second of this podcast, from the intro to segment one and two to the middle section. Sometimes we'll do shout outs and kudos. Sometimes we'll do some other things. And then at the end, I'm going to add the trail tip of the week. I reached out and asked some of the Big Ass Runner Herd members, give me your best trail tip. And so I'm going to share those each and every week when we wrap up the episode. So look forward to that in this episode at the end. Stick around, get your trail tip of the week. Well, with that, let's get going on episode number 158 of the Big Ass Runner. Well, now joining us on the Big Ass Runner Hotline is Jody Fisher. Jody, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Such a pleasure to be here.
We're very excited to talk to you. I've had a couple of our listeners actually tell me about your products, and we'll get to that here in a second. But before we do so, I would love for our listeners, and that's the Big Ass Runner Herd, to get to know you a little bit. So tell us about where you are in the world, maybe a little bit about your backstory, where you grew up, your athletic background.
Okay, great. So currently I'm in Tucson, Arizona, and it's really warm right now. I'll say that. Did not grow up here. Actually grew up in New York, but left to go to college and move around, and I end up back here. I end up here in Tucson. So that's where I'm at. It's very pretty. Happy to be here. Let's see. I currently still work full-time. I work in criminal justice. I work for the federal courts. I work in probation and pretrial. I'm an analyst. Previously, I used to work more hands-on. I used to be a probation officer, but now I'm older. Don't have the stomach for that. I hope to retire within a year. So fingers crossed, everything goes well. And if not, I'll be fine. I'm always fine, but you know, we hope for the best. And that's really running. I started running probably 7 years ago. I was cycling, got injured, had to have surgery. And the doctor said, please don't cycle any longer, and had suggested running. So, okay, great. So I went to my local Fleet Feet store, got some running shoes, and they had a like a run walk 5K group, similar to like a couch to 5K. So I joined that, and that was about 7 years ago. I mildly enjoy running on a good day. Guaranteed, I am not the best runner that you will have or ever meet. Very middle of the pack. Never go long distances. For me, nothing good happens after 5 miles. Right? So that's it. I've learned this. It's taken a few years, but I've learned this. So now I just run, you know, the only races I do will be 5Ks and 10Ks, and that's it. Love my running crew. They're the best part of it is the friends you make while running. And we tend to go fun places and run. And a lot of my friends run marathons. So they'll want to go, like we just not that long ago went to Philadelphia. I ran an 8K and they, different friends ran either the marathon or the half marathon. So like I said, not the greatest runner, but I do enjoy it. It does, I think, keep me mentally and maybe a little physically fit.
Got it. Yeah, we all don't run, you know, the longer distances. The shorter distances are great too. We on this show, we typically a trail runner. Sometimes folks like the shorter distances, but we also have a lot of listeners that do 50Ks and 100Ks and beyond. That's 250 amazing. Milers, you never know. We like to go really slow and eat a lot of food though.
Yeah, sure. I get that. But I'm just not cut out for long distances or trail, right? I'm just too clumsy. I will find every route, everything to trip over. I will find it. So I just learned after a couple of times that it is lovely and it is definitely interesting, more so, I think, than some of the road running. But, you know your place, and trail is not it for me.
I get it. Well, but it was on, I think, a run that you came up with the idea that led to Go Yes. Guarded. So I'd love to hear that Sure. story. Tell us a little bit about what happened.
So, like I said, I started running about 7 years ago. Brand new runner, didn't have my squad yet. So I'm out doing a solo run. And I was doing the perimeter of this Midtown Park we have here in Tucson. Pretty big park. So it's, you know, like maybe 3 miles around. Perfect. And I don't know how, but I somehow managed to take a wrong turn. And I ended up in this secluded, dark part of the park. The sun was setting. I just got very concerned for my personal safety. And I just felt very unprepared. And that feeling stuck with me. So, of course, I have that background, like I said, in criminal justice. So personal safety, super important to me. I'm always looking out for myself. And so I just started Googling and looking, like, what do runners use for protection? And there was really, other than pepper spray, there was literally nothing. And I said, this can't be, right? I'm like, Google, this can't be. How, pepper spray has its purpose, but it also has its limitations. I've never been a huge fan. And so I had this idea for the ring, the Go Guarded ring, and kind of thought about it, and talked to some of my runner friends, and everybody thought, well, that's just a fantastic idea and you should pursue that. And so that was the beginning of it. And so just took baby steps to get it developed, right? So I had this idea, vetted it a bit past that stage, found a product team, a product engineering team, met with them. They thought it was a great idea. And I was like, okay. And obviously I've never done this before. I've got zero background in anything other than law enforcement and criminal justice, right? How do you develop a product? I have no idea, but we're going to figure it out. And that's how it was born. It was kind of baby steps. They said, okay, yeah, we like it. We'll do it. We're going to make a prototype. Okay, great. How much is that? Okay, it's like $1,000. Okay, I can afford that.
Well, and I want you to walk us through the development and the products, but I want to take a quick step back because you mentioned criminal justice. You weren't in product development. Do you have an entrepreneurial spirit? Like where did this come from? Yeah, because there's one thing to say, oh, I see a need. Mm-hmm. There's another thing to say, I think I'm the one to fill this need. I'm just curious.
Yeah,
was it just like, hey?
Because I don't know, right? I have no idea. People ask me that. I'm like, I don't know. I guess, I mean, I will say this, and this is the truth. At the time, she's now retired, but at the time, I absolutely detested my boss. And I've never, in all the 20-something years I've worked in professionally in criminal justice, I have never disliked my boss. But for this particular, I just got... Well, anyway, I won't go into the details, but, and I think that would maybe might've been part of the motivation to see a way out because she's now retired and it all worked out and I'm, have a much better boss now, but maybe that was part of it. And, I had just gotten divorced a couple of years prior. So I'm just rebuilding my life and maybe that was also maybe part of it to just do something really interesting and to kind of rebrand myself or something. I honestly don't know. I don't think about it too much. I look back and I'm like, wow, you really did that. Like that's like now it's fine right now. It's a business. It's up, it's running. A lot of the stress and the anxiety of trying to get it off the ground has passed. So I think like a lot of people, when you're in the moment, you just put your head down. I've always been a hard worker. I just put my head down. I get my job done regardless. And whether that's work or running or cycling or raising a family, it's not always pleasant. School was hard. I went to graduate school. That was hard. But I've always just been relentlessly forward. Just here's my goal, head down. Get it done. So I think probably the combination of all those things.
Jody, tell us a little bit more about, because I know you're passionate about runner safety beyond even the products that you're creating. Tell us a little bit more about how runners can be more safe when they're out running.
So I think it's so important. One of the things, I mean, obviously this is a business. I need to keep the lights on. So I want to sell Go Guarded products. And eventually I would like to retire. So yeah, it is a business, but more importantly is spreading awareness about runner safety and just safety in general. I think it's so important and we just can't talk about it enough. So one of the most important things that I feel for runner safety is situational awareness, right? We have to always be aware of what's going on around us. And I call it, head on a swivel. You want to be constantly engaged with your environment. You don't wear two earphones, either wear aftershocks or just one earbud in, leave the other one open so you could hear what's going on around. You want to be engaged with your environment. You want to, always be looking around, not face buried in your phone. And then what I like to do, whether I'm running or driving or anywhere out in the world, I like to play the what if game, right? So I'm always constantly thinking and staying engaged. Like, okay, this guy's running towards me. You know, what am I going to do if X, Y, and Z? I'll be driving. I'd be like, oh, okay, that guy is driving kind of crazy. What am I going to do if he... So I always know like who's next to me in each lane, how close the person is behind me when I'm driving. So that's just something I do. And I think it's a good idea to keep ourselves safer, whether we're running, you know, like I said, walking across campus, anything like that. And the other thing for me is attitude, right? Just know, like, dude, you don't want to pick me. Do not pick me. I am not the one. I am not the one. I will fight like a banshee, and because I know I'm worth fighting for, right? And I know my worth, and I know that I can defend myself, and I have that confidence, and I like to kind of lead with that out in the world. Like, I am not the one. And I think that's so important, and especially for women. And then how do they get there, right? Do whatever you need to do to build that confidence, whether it's take self-defense, whether it's taking Krav Maga, jiu-jitsu, whatever you need to build that confidence, I think is really so important. You know, shoulders back, chest out, head up, looking around.
I love it. Yeah. And we talk about on the show a lot about personal safety. And I wonder, because of the fact that you're in criminal justice, you saw this need. You said, I don't want other people to feel the same way I'm feeling out running on the trail, or otherwise. And I think, you know, I think about the product, and we're about to dive into the products here in a second. But when I'm out for running, I'm a 6'4 Clydesdale. I'm a bigger fella out. But I also think a lot of times when you're out, you know, it's not just other people, it's wild animals or sure. you never know.
Dogs.
So it's always good to have your dogs. Exactly. We have coyotes here in the North Dallas area have been attacking people lately. And so for me, I'll sometimes carry a knife just in my pocket. Cause you just never know what you're going to come across.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, you're probably less in need of personal protection because you are not a likely victim. You're a big dude, right? Some creep isn't going to be like, I'm taking him down. Like, you know, they're going to wait.
He's really slow.
Yeah. But they're going to wait for, you know, a much easier target. And that's really sad to say, but it's just the truth. Like criminal creeps they don't want to get injured. They don't want to get caught. They don't want to get their ass beat by some big guy. So they're going to wait for some 110-pound, 5'2" lone female. It's really sad.
It is sad. And having two daughters who, in thinking about them being out by themselves, running or otherwise, I think what's great about these products is that you don't have to use them while running. You just have them on your body while you're out
Absolutely.
And about.
Yeah. When you're on taking the subway, the BART, the Metro, you're walking across campus, you're getting into your car in a dark parking lot, anything, right? So initially they were designed for runners and the specific needs of runners. So it's got to be convenient. It's got to be super comfortable and it's got to be effective. And so they were made with runners in mind, but yeah, of course that they're great for students walking across campus, nurses, you know, working late shifts and having to get in their car, you know, in some dark hospital parking lot, women walking home in cities.
And you were mentioning, so you had the idea for the ring and you vetted it with some of your running friends and they said, oh, great idea. You go and find a product marketing person, perhaps, to help build you a prototype. And that's where I interrupted you and wanted to talk a little bit more about you. So walk us from there. How do you get from prototype to finished product?
Yeah. So once I had the prototype, then I could get more feedback. And I reached out and I will tell you, I don't know if you know who Todd Williams is.
I do not.
Okay. So he has this program called Run Safer, and he's sponsored by ASICS. And I think post-COVID, it's probably no longer going on, but pre-COVID, it's this awesome program. Todd would go around to independent running shops. ASICS would sponsor him, and he would talk about runner safety and what he could, what people, particularly women, could do to stay safer. And Todd is a previous two-time Olympic runner, and he also is a self-defense expert and owns jiu-jitsu gym and is a black belt. And so he took those two loves and he combined them. And I reached out to him, just absolute cold call to him. And he, what a nice guy, right? And he responded. He's like, I think that's a great idea. And he said, hey, I'm going to be up in Phoenix, which is, you know, like an hour and a half from where I'm at in Tucson. I said, hey, I'm going to come up. Would you meet with me if I come up there and I show you the prototype? Oh, he said, absolutely. Come on up. And I did. I met with him at a running shop up in Phoenix, and he couldn't have been nicer, couldn't have been more supportive. And he thought it was a great idea. And then he just would, he's a very personable guy. So he's just asking everybody around him, like, hey, come here, come check this out. You know, he'd ask females. He says, what do you think of this? Do you think this is a good idea? And really, that was such a turning point for me, because it gets hard, right? Like, you think, am I on the right path? I think this is a good idea, but do other people think it's a good idea? And so when the days would get dark, you know, and I'm not talking about like the sunset, I'm talking more mentally, right?
Yeah, totally.
I would just think back. I'm like, you know what? Todd thinks this is a good idea. Like, Todd is in my corner. If Todd thinks this is a good idea, because that guy is like a winner, right? He's so motivated. And he's had so many achievements. I'm like, Todd thinks it's a good idea. So when I doubted myself, I would rely on that. And so we moved forward with from the prototype. I said, okay, what's the next step? And they said, okay. And the next step was very expensive. It was manufacturing. And so I thought, well, sure, let's like drain your retirement account and make this happen. So literally, that's what I did.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was tough because I'm already not on the young side, right? I'm already 50 at that point. Nobody should be draining their retirement account at 50. But I did. So crazy. I'd look back and I don't know how I did it. I don't know how I got any sleep or any peace or any rest because it was so high stakes. But yeah, that's really the story of how it happened. Yeah. And here we are.
You know, what I love about that story. You mentioned Todd. I think in so many elements of life, we talk about it on the show around hitting big goals. You need that person in your corner that's going to encourage you, that gives you that little push that says you're heading in the right direction. Keep going. Don't stop now. I love that Todd was that for you, and you continue to kind of keep that mantra in your head. Okay, if Todd thinks it's a good idea, it's a good idea.
I mean, it pushed me through. And prior to this, Todd was a stranger to me. I literally cold called him.
Yeah.
So like what, yeah, he really was such an inspiration to me.
I love it. Well, walk us through the different products. You mentioned the ring, and that was the first one. And this is a podcast, so people are probably going to have to, if you're not familiar with your products, you have to use your imagination a little bit. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about this first product that you created.
So the ring, so it literally is just that. You just slip it on your finger and you can adjust the size. And then it's just there. It's a serrated edge. It's a heavy duty plastic ring, serrated edges and a sharp point, obviously at the end. And then it's got a silicone rubber cover. So less likelihood you'd accidentally harm yourself. But the idea behind it is it's attached to you, to your finger. So it's less likely to be taken away from you if, you know, God forbid you are in a fight or get attacked. It's always ready. You know, you're not like, oh, hold on, Mr. Attacker, let me get my X, Y, or Z out of my fanny pack, out of my pocket. It's right there and it's attached to your hand. And if you are end up in a fight, you're naturally going to use your hands. So it just gives you an advantage. It kind of levels the playing field a little bit. And I think people would be surprised, you know, if they decided to attack you and they wouldn't know what happened. And that actually happened. This woman in Kentucky, this was about 18 months ago, and she reached out to me and shared her story. So I won't name her, obviously, but she was running one morning by herself, heard footsteps behind her, turned around, and this guy jumps on her and tackles her. And she's on the ground and he's pawing at her, trying to get her clothes, you know, rip her clothes off. And she reaches up and she punches this guy in the face with her go-guarded ring and stabs him right in the cheek. So this guy obviously doesn't know what the heck just happened to him. So he jumps up, runs away, drops his phone, and she calls the police. They now have his phone and they have his DNA. And they catch him within hours, a day, and with his DNA, they were able to close a bunch of cases they tied in that area. There were especially like 2 weeks, maybe a month prior, there was a sexual assault of a teenage girl, and he was the perpetrator of that, and they got him in custody. So yeah, a little bit of shock and awe with the ring, because you know, the assailant, it's all about power and control, right? He's in charge, right? The assailant. And then you stab him in the face and you take away his power.
I got to ask you, Jody, you mentioned you drained your retirement funds to create this product. But when you hear yeah. that actual real story, yeah. that's got to make you think it was absolutely worth it.
Absolutely worth it. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's, and there might be other cases. I'm sure there are, but you know, it's a long healing journey if something like that happens to you. It took 18 months for her, this victim, to process and heal enough that she could reach out to me and tell her story. So I think there are probably others out there, but absolutely, it was worth it.
I've got the product here. You sent sure. me some samples, so thank you for that. Yes. It is super light. It's actually pretty cool, you know?
Yeah.
And to your point, it's something. It's on your body. It's not going to get ripped off. In my pocket knife example, I would have had to unzip my, because I have zippable pockets, take out the knife, undo the knife. If I'm getting attacked from behind, that's not going to happen.
Exactly. And that's the beauty. And that was what we were going for, that it's always ready. You don't have to do anything.
So that's the ring. Tell me about the, because you have a couple of other SKUs that you sent me. Tell me about those as well.
So the next thing is a handheld. So that sits in the palm of your hand and it Velcro straps behind your hand. So again, your hand's free. You can still fix your ponytail. You can still check your Garmin, tie your shoes, your hands. And that's the same thing with the ring. You can still use your hands with the ring on. So with the handheld, it's got that same go-guarded heavy-duty plastic blade on the bottom of it, but the top has a pocket where you can either put pepper spray, an alarm, or our newest product is a stun device. And so that way you have the pepper spray, the alarm, or the stun gun to try to deter an attacker, right? If somebody's coming at you and you're able to pepper spray them and it averts the attack, or the alarm scares them, or you actually shock them and temporarily subdue, paralyze them with the stun gun, then great. You know, the best fight is the one avoided, and you've managed to do that. But if for some reason the alarm doesn't scare them, the pepper spray, it doesn't hit them enough in the face, or the wind is blowing the wrong way, and it does turn into a hands-on attack and you have to fight for your life, you've got that blade right there in the palm of your hand for just hammer strikes to just, you know, fight your way out. And obviously we don't want, or most of us don't want to kill anyone, but you just want to buy yourself a little time to just get away, just a few seconds that you need to get away.
Yeah. You sent me the pepper spray and the stun device. Man, this thing, I mean, I'm going to play it in the mic here.
Yeah.
It is awesome. I mean, that would scare the heck out of me and stun me kind of way.
Yeah, exactly. And even that, even the sound of that crackling, that loud crackling, would be enough to, in a lot of cases, to deter someone and just go, you know what? She is not the victim for me, right? Like, because like I said, the criminals, they're nervous. They're nervous. They don't want to get caught. They don't want to get injured, right? So they're, you know, if we take these steps, then it's less likely that we will become victims or easy targets.
Yeah, really cool products that I'm going to get my daughters, and I'm actually going to run with one too, because they're just, I think, that helpful. And you just never know. You can never be too sure.
And there are men. I am in contact. This man, I'll just use his first name. His name is Bennett, and he was running in Philadelphia. And it was about a year and a half ago on Christmas. It was like the day before Christmas, the day after Christmas. And he was out on a solo run somewhere in Philadelphia. And, you know, he's a nice guy. So somebody stopped, some guy stopped and said, oh, what time is it or which direction or something. So Bennett stops, talks to the guy for a second. And the guy was clearly unstable. And he just starts stabbing.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So he gets away and the guy gets arrested. The guy was not, he just sat and waited. Like, he didn't. So it does happen. Yes. Go Guarded is mostly focused on keeping women runners safe, but it is an issue for guys too.
Yep. And love it. Love that you saw a need. And even though you weren't thought of yourself as an entrepreneur or product developer, you figured it out and are helping runners with this great product. And I would love for you to tell us how, if someone is interested, and by the way, I think I heard from our friend Mo and just more recently my friend Sergio about Go Guarded. That's how we got connected. Yeah. I'd love for you to tell our listeners how they can find out more.
Sure. So the website is goguarded.com, and everything you need to know, all the products, there's some videos on there about self-defense and safety, and everything you need to know is on there. We're also on Instagram, go_guarded on Instagram. Would love to be friends on there. And again, we try and post content that is regarding safety and how to escape this kind of hold. And we just did one recently, what happens if you get attacked by a dog? So I'll promote a lot of other people's content that is safety related and what to do, how to escape different, you know, if somebody's got you up against the wall in a choke, if somebody's got you on the ground in a choke, if somebody's got you by the ponytail. So all that stuff is the majority of what I like to post on Instagram, any kind of safety stories that we hear.
That's great. Well, definitely go connect with Jody at Go Guarded. It's at Go Guarded on Instagram and goguarded.com if you're interested in these products. They're amazing. Awesome products. Thank you so much. Like I said, for filling a need and one that means running safety so very important. So thank you for all the great work that you're doing in that area.
Absolutely.
Well, Jody, thanks so much for joining the show. We appreciate your passion around this topic, to the point where you're willing to drain your retirement to help create great products. But beyond that, it's the education that you just shared with us too. Being aware of your surroundings, doing the what if scenarios, so very important. So thanks so much for joining the show, and thanks for all that you're doing around this particular topic.
Oh, thank you so much. What a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity.
Hey, did you know that I offer trail running coaching? If you are needing someone to help organize your training, if you feel like you're out there just willy-nilly doing different runs, not really putting together a plan, if you'd like to work with me, my goal is to help as many runners cross the finish line as I can. I'm very relational, one-on-one, very small roster of athletes. If you're interested, I have a few spots left. We had some new folks join the Big Ass Runner coaching team over the last couple of weeks. A couple of spots left. If you're interested, I am offering the OG roster discount. You will get this price for life. reach out, Jeff at Big Ass Runner. Let's chat and see if it would be a good fit. But I would love to work with you. That's Jeff at BigAssRunner.com.
Howdy, y'all, and welcome to the Coaching Corral. So mosey on in, watch your step, and stay a while.
All right, well, welcome back to the Coaching Corral. As always, we have Coach Greg and Coach Melody. Welcome.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Glad to be back.
I again threw you for a little bit of a loop there, like I did last episode. I'm excited about this one because this is one I think that separates ultra runners from mere humans. I think this is my opinion. And that's mental toughness, because you've got to have mental toughness, I think, to really excel at the ultra distances, to get through the training, to get through those times where it's uncomfortable, where it's difficult. And so we're going to talk a little bit about mental toughness. And we're going to start with you, Coach Melody. First of all, I know this is a topic you love talking about. Tell us a little bit about maybe how you define it, and then some of the things when you're working with your athletes to help them obtain it, and maybe even talk a little bit about, is it innate? Do we need to develop it? Is it a little bit of both? Talk to us about mental toughness.
That's a good question. Well, first of all, how would I define mental toughness? I think mental toughness is your ability to keep going when it gets hard. Are you the kind of person who's just going to stop and give up, or are you going to problem solve and figure out how to learn and grow from this obstacle and move forward from it? Some things that I teach my athletes is do hard things. You know, that's really what it comes down to. And I've mentioned this before, is I have all of my athletes do one thing that they hate every single day, whether maybe their least favorite thing is sidekicks or push-ups, or I have them do that every day. And then one athlete just came to mind. She's training for the Pony Express 100 in October, which is a very, very flat 100. It's a very boring 100. It's the same scenery the entire time. So it takes a lot of mental toughness. I feel like that's really similar to loop courses where you're doing the same thing over and over. So some of the things that I've had her done is like a 25-mile run on a treadmill. She's not allowed to watch TV, not allowed to listen to music, just to learn how to zone out, learn how to pay attention to your body. And then as far as can you build mental toughness or is it innate? My opinion, I think it's a little bit of both. I do actually think some people are born with more mental toughness than others. And I think it also is like, how did you grow up? Like Sally McRae or David Goggins, they of course, they have these, you know, crazy childhoods, these crazy backstories. And you hear these stories and you're like, of course you're so mentally tough. Like you had to grow up really fast. You've gone through these really hard things. And then my husband and I, in our podcast, Total 100, we interviewed this guy, Jake Rastez. He's a 23-year-old former D1 football player. And he came on our podcast and he was very David Goggins-esque. Just, you know, he was like, you know, just push, grind. And you could tell this is innate. Like he was born with this ability to just push. And that being said, I do feel like you can build your mental toughness. That's half of the point of training, is not only to get physically stronger, but to get mentally stronger. When things get hard in training, learn how to push through, learn how to problem solve. So when race day comes, when things get hard, when issues arise, you know how to push through and you know how to problem solve.
Yeah, you hit on a bunch of things that I was going to add. One is, yeah, you don't want to find out how mentally tough you are on race day. Hopefully you've trained and you've experienced some things. I do agree with you too, that I think for some people it is a bit innate. I think of Courtney Dewalter, who loves the pain cave, like loves it. Like she's said how much she loves the pain cave. Most of us aren't built like that, but I think a lot of us can develop it over time. And Coach Greg, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that too, as you're working with your athletes. What are you uncovering?
I think you're probably right where you're probably not necessarily born tough. But if we do the cutoff, it, you know, you're probably somewhere in your childhood. If you raised in more adverse conditions, that's, I guess we could count that as nature, right? But you can definitely nurture. You can become tough if your upbringing was a lot easier. So I think, yeah, it's definitely both. So I think, and it's probably a good book, is that Steve Magnus, Do Hard Things. And a lot of probably things I'll touch on comes from that book. But he had a phrase that I had to steal. It's kind of its own the voice in your head, right? So say you're going out for a run, a long run, an hour in, you feel a pull on your calf. So you get voices in your head like, oh, do I have a calf strain? Or am I just tired? So I guess toughness, you define it as, you know, if you're experienced, you'll know, like, okay, I'm just fatigued. It's not a big deal. You can kind of push that voice out of your head. But if you're a newer runner, you're like, oh my gosh, I do have a calf strain. I better stop. So it's not necessarily a pain tolerance thing. It's just the experience of knowing. So it's kind of distinguishing between feedback from your body or just fear. So I think part of it is developing that toughness to, you know, train your more, not necessarily your body, but train your brain to turn down that alarm when, like, oh, this is off, you know, what's going on. So I think the important phrase is, kind of own the voice in your head, you know which voice to listen. Are you going to listen to the positive voice in your head, which is the logic side, or are you going to listen to the fear or the negative voice in your head, which I think I'm going to get the quote all wrong, but I think it's a stronger voice typically, because the fear voice in your head is stronger than the logic. So you just have to kind of train yourself through experience, like Melody said, doing hard things in training and knowing that, okay, you know, 5 minutes later the calf loosened up, okay, I'm fine. So that's something you kind of tuck into your and I guess this is a Goggins thing to you, what is it, that cookie in the jar thing? So you do tough things, you add it to your, and I'm getting these all wrong, there's so much stuff going on, but this is a little life experience that you kind of tuck away, like, okay, I pushed past this, and it's just learning toughness through experience.
Yeah, I think experience is so important. And we talked on the podcast, I can't remember what episode it was, about soundtracks. And it says those soundtracks that play in your head that can either be positive, but to your point, Coach Greg, usually they're negative. For some reason, it's the negative ones that seem to be louder. And I'm curious, Coach Melody, is if you dealt with that with any of your athletes, and how do you help them overcome that? Is it experience? Is it training? Any insight that you can share with how you're working with your athletes?
Yeah, I wish that there was some kind of magical answer or magic pill that you can take. I mean, I guess there is medication if it's something serious, but I wish, or maybe a special drink that just made you think positive, but really it just comes down to practicing positive thinking. So when a negative thought comes in, you just need to practice getting rid of it and then replacing it with a positive one. A couple techniques is, if you think a negative thought, accept it, let that thought roll by, and then say three positive things. Another technique is, if you catch yourself saying something negative, you say the word stop out loud. You stop yourself from thinking that, and then you change your thoughts to positive thoughts. And it, at first, especially if you're more prone to thinking negatively, it's really, really difficult. And the thing is, it's not something that you can measure. It's not something that people can see. Like, no one's going to clap for you when you change a thought in your head. So it really, you just have to rely on yourself and remember that as you get better at this and as you think positively, it's going to affect your life and in your training. And it will become evident once you start PRing and getting faster and getting stronger.
I think you bring up a good point, Coach Melody, which is that the mental side is training just like the physical side is. I think a lot of times we think about training as only being physical, but if we're really working with our athletes well, we're also helping them train that mental side as well, getting rid of that self or that negative self-talk. And I can't remember where I heard this, but I heard it. I wish I could give credit where I heard it, but I just can't remember, is adding the term yet to, because a lot of times you'll say, oh, I've never run 50 miles yet. I mean, if you had yet, it's this forward momentum. It's like, well, no, you haven't, but you will someday. So I think adding that is important. The last thing I'd love to hit on is imposter syndrome. I think that's something all of us have dealt with over time. And Coach Greg, I want to start with you. Any experience there as you're working with, it could be your personal experience or experience with athletes relative to imposter syndrome, and how are you dealing with that?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, everyone deals with it. I mean, whether as a runner and recently for me as a coach. So you have athletes, they come and go. Some will ask you to work with them for a big race. And then when that big race is done, you know, they're going to go off on their own and do things. But then you have athletes, say, work with you for years, and they've decided they need a change in the voice of who's helping them along their way. And maybe that person goes to another coach that you may know. So, you know, when that happens, and that's happened to me several times, you know, I don't expect everyone to stay with me forever. And honestly, the way that I coach, everything is transparent. So ideally, they probably don't need me. There's this methodology. This is what's worked for you. I think we'll probably pick it up and go on and on. It's a bad business model. But as far as developing the athlete, that's the way to go. But, you know, it's happened. And they leave. And if you're not human, if you don't think that, oh, my God, why did I go? What did I do? You know, what's wrong with me? But then you are probably not the best person to. I don't think I have a good answer for it, but it's something that I think everyone deals with, whether in their profession or in our personal thing. But I think you need to focus on the positive. You know, I have other athletes that are here. You know, it's not personal, whether an athlete, it could be personal, but hopefully it's just they just need a change of voice. They want someone else, a different methodology. So I don't try to take that personally. You know, you can probably accept it for a little bit, and then you just kind of have to move on. Hopefully Melody has something a lot better than this. Even I've been coaching for 5-6 years, and I still deal with imposter syndrome on occasion, and I do as a runner as well. And I've been running ultras for 10-11 years. But you still have to lean on the positives. You lean on what you've accomplished. You need to kind of take a bird's eye view of everything and not just focus on this, you know, this specific athlete leaving or this specific race. And I'll hand off to Melody. Save me.
I will hand it off to Melody, but a couple of things that as you were talking about came to mind. One is, I think I was talking to Courtney Boyle, and I think, Greg, I think you know Courtney. She's done Cocodona for all 3 years. She did all the 200s last year. She did, I guess, the four 200-mile races. And she told me, even having done all that, sometimes she'll toe the line and go, am I even a runner? Like, can I even do this? And so I think the first thing is, I think it's something we all struggle with. If you think you're the only one that struggles with imposter syndrome, then I think it can become this thing that's maybe even debilitating to some degree. But recognizing that, man, everyone at all levels, elite athletes deal with imposter syndrome. I think it stems from that negative self-talk, like, who are you to be able to do this? Or who are you to be able to toe the line?
And to your point, I think it goes to that comparison game, which everyone does. So it's easy to have imposter syndrome if I'm comparing myself to, as a coach, to David Roche or Jason Koop. And as an athlete, I'm not trying to compare myself to Jim Walmsley. So I think it's all the perspective, right? And this is probably another topic for another day as far as the comparison game. So especially with social media, everything's so transparent. Well, mostly transparent. You can see what other people are doing, what other athletes are doing, what other coaches are doing. And it's easy to look at that and like, huh, am I doing the right thing for my athletes? So I think it's closely related as far as the comparison, playing that comparison game and then comparing yourself to maybe other prominent athletes or coaches.
who are probably doubting themselves as well. Like you can't even put yourself in their mind to know what, you know, what they're thinking. Also, I will hand it off now to you, Coach Melody. What are some of the things you're either for yourself personally or your athletes in terms of imposter syndrome?
Yeah, well, that was my answer, was not comparing yourself to other people. The first time that I really experienced imposter syndrome was when I started my first business as a physical therapy assistant. I was training runners and I was still really new as a PTA. I barely even worked as a PTA, just decided to go off on my own and start my own business. And I was like, what am I doing? There's people out there who know way more about running than I do. And I was comparing myself to all these other PTAs and physical therapists. And I had to learn to just accept where I'm at, accept what I know, accept what I don't know, and also realize that I do know more things than the average person. So I can help. And also just in running, you guys mentioned social media. I think that's huge. Just seeing Sally McGray and all these other great athletes, it's hard to not compare yourself, especially as a coach. You know, it's really easy to think like, oh, what am I doing coaching people when you go get Sally McGray as a coach, you know? But I will say this. One thing I learned is the best coach is someone who's one or two steps ahead of you. You could actually, like, if you're a beginner runner and you go get a coach like Sally McGray or Mike McKnight, it could potentially not be the best fit for you because they're used to training elite athletes and they're probably going to give you a plan that's 70, 80 miles a week before you're ready. Versus someone who, you know, maybe they've ran a couple marathons and you're learning how to run your first 5K. Someone who has a little bit more experience than you, who kind of freshly remembers what it's like to be in your shoes, who can relate to you a little bit more. So that's one thing that I've learned. Yeah, I think it's just, one more thing I wanted to say was I've had some other runners reach out to me and say like, hey, I'm really interested in coaching, but I feel like I'm not like qualified to coach. One person reached out to me and she just ran her first 50K. And she's like, I just don't know if I'm qualified to coach. Like she had in her head that she had to, you know, run a couple 100s before she could start coaching people. And I was like, here's the thing. I think the percentage of the world that runs a marathon is like 0.2%. And so I don't even know what that percentage is when you start getting into ultras. So I'm like, yeah, maybe you haven't ran hundreds. So you probably shouldn't coach people on how to run a 100-mile race. But you can help someone run their first 5K or their first half marathon because you've done it before. You have the experience. Just, yeah, accepting what you know and what you don't know, being honest in your abilities, continuing to learn and to grow, and just stop comparing yourself to other people because we're all in different places. But there's always people that we can help.
Yep, that's a good word. I think you nailed what I was going to add to just a couple steps ahead of someone else. They're just trying to figure out the few steps that you just took. And that's where I leaned on Coach Greg, because I had never done 100K before and I'd never run with poles. And I didn't know what poles to get. And he's like, get the Leckie poles. And that was a great suggestion. So I think that mindset of, yeah, you don't have to know it all. You just need to know a little bit more than the person you're coaching. I want to end on this. I want to end on something I think, Coach Greg, you're phenomenal at. And that is community. Because I think when you think about mental toughness, you think about, you know, this inward strength, and it's certainly part of it, but it's also the people alongside you that are encouraging you and running alongside and crewing you or pacing you or doing the training runs and meeting up in, you know, Sunday mornings at 7:30 a.m. to run together. So let's land on this last question. How important do you think community is as people are listening to this in terms of kind of developing that toughness? We'll start with you, Coach Greg.
Yeah, so I think it's integral for newer runners and experienced runners. It's easy if you are training by yourself to put yourself in a silo, like, oh, this is what I'm doing. And if you don't know any better, this is probably, as far as you know, that's the only correct thing. If you go on like Trail and Ultra Facebook and you see some of the questions that people are asking, you're like, are they serious? I mean, I thought some of them feel like they're trolling. This cannot be a serious question. But, you know, if you don't have access to a coach, if you surround yourself with experienced runners, and even if they're less experienced, you know, you're all kind of making the same mistakes at the same time. But if you're running with more experienced people, you know, trail runners are so engaging and happy to share their experiences. You'll smooth out that learning curve so much faster just by ingesting the mistakes that someone else has made at this race. And they're happy, you know, the big mistakes are the best stories. And so you'll learn so much more from just involving yourself in the community, and it's going to accelerate that learning curve so much faster.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I love most about trail running is the community. Coach Melia, what do you think that impact is in terms of community and mental toughness?
Well, the whole reason my husband and I stayed in ultra running was because of the community. We were so impressed. First of all, with our first 100 mile race we ever did, we had so many people come help us and support us. And we felt even more loved and supported than we did on our wedding day that day. And we were so impressed with that. And since then, we've, you know, paced and volunteered and crewed at lots of other races and raced other races. And every single time, we're just blown away at the community and the service. And I listened to your podcast with Mike McKnight, and he was talking about how when he passes first place, most of the time, it's very cordial. And I just think that's awesome. With this, everyone just wants everyone to do their best. And I just think that's awesome. Man, the ultra running community is the best. I think I'm a little biased, but I think this is the best sport in the world.
Yeah, and I said that was the last question, but I want to ask one quick, because I know you got to run. We got to run here in a second, but I want to ask this last one. As coaches, do you feel more sense of accomplishment when you cross the finish line than when your athletes cross the finish line? Because I think that gets at this idea of community. It's like, for me, I celebrate more when I see a friend or a running partner accomplish a big goal, and I'm sure you guys are the same, Coach Greg.
I would totally agree. You get so much more fulfillment just being a small part of whether you paced 50 miles of someone's race or you were there at the 3 or 4 aid stations when they came in as crew. I think, and this just for me, happened a week ago. I'm more fulfilled by helping my friend Eric to his crew jewel buckle than I am by my own finish there a few years ago.
Yep. Love it. Coach Melody.
Ditto. That's why I coach. I mean, it's great to cross the finish line of your first ultra, your first 100, but nothing compares to helping someone else cross the finish line. It's I feel like it's a fulfillment that you can't even explain.
It's the best feeling. It's the best feeling. Well, if someone's listening and going, I want that feeling, and you guys are a few steps ahead of me, and I would be interested in working with you. Coach Melody, how can someone reach out to you? What's the best way?
Best way to reach out to me is on my Instagram. My handle is the Pine Tree Runner.
Coach Greg?
Yep. And you can also reach me on Instagram at Ultra Ninja Runner without the E.
Awesome. There you go. This has been fantastic content. Thank you guys so much for sharing your expertise and your knowledge. And like I said before, watch your step on the way out of the coaching corral, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of weeks.
See you guys.
Talk soon.
Well, believe it or not, that is the end of episode number 158 of The Big Ass Runner. Thanks to everybody involved with this episode. To James for that awesome intro. To Jody for sharing her story and her amazing product that she has created, Go Guarded. Check it out, goguarded.com. And also to Coach Greg and Coach Melody for sharing your wisdom nuggets with us. Hey, the trail tip of the week is debuting right now. It's debuting right now. And it comes to us from Michelle Baker. She reminds us her tip is to stay in the moment. Stay in the moment. Get out there sometimes and we can zone out or can get distracted. Stay in the moment. That's actually also, that came to us from Kim Endo as well. She said, don't get too distracted. Watch phone spacing out. Stay in the moment. We want to thank also our audio engineer, Steve Sarsaparilla Saunders.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Well, with that, get out there, hit those trails, and keep running your asses off. Episode number one, scratch that. In segment number one, it's just a great time to clear the head, and that sounded weird too. Clear your head. Number two, that sounded weird.